Welcome to the U-Turn Podcast. This is the place to connect to who you truly are. We're bringing PhDs, experts, and leaders to help you elevate your mindset in your work life and in your love life so that you can see things differently and truly love your world. I'm Ashley Stahl. I'm a career expert, author, and TEDx speechwriter and booker, and I'm excited to bring you in to this week's episode. What's going on, U-Turn people? It's Ashley Stahl here, and I've got a repeat on the show because he has to be back because he's so good. It's Stefanos Sifondos, and he is a behavioral science educated relationship expert, and he's really committed to helping people reach their fullest potential. And he really fuses together the Eastern and the Western approaches and philosophies and creates a balanced approach to spiritual well-being, personal growth. And his expertise is everything from, you know, trauma release to navigating modern relationship dynamics to helping men and women break free of these negative cycles that can really infuse themselves into your relationships. He's the co-founder of a premier coaching institute and a global men's well-being movement. And he's been the go-to expert for thousands, including elite athletes, military professionals. And he focuses on helping them transform the self, transform their relationships, transform their connections. So today we are going to talk all things love, dating, relationships, human performance, trauma. He's too interesting for me to pick one topic. So everybody just get your pens out. Stefanos, thanks for coming back on.
Thank you for a lovely intro. I actually appreciate you.
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of embarrassing because I feel like on this show, I always talk about where I'm at in hopes that it's going to help somebody else, but also because it's the only way I can be me is talking about what I understand and asking questions from that lens. I feel like there's a lot of people post-pandemic who we saw the divorce rate go up. And so I think there's a lot of people who are kind of like getting back out there. And it's such an act of like self-love and self-respect to like date and get to know people and choose the right relationship. I know you've become a father. Like, what are some of the biggest things you've learned through that lens now of being a parent and nurturing a loving relationship, not just with your kid, but with your partner? What are some of those bigger takeaways that you've gotten since COVID?
It's a really nice way to frame what you just framed around people getting out there again and dating, and that in and of itself is an act of self-love. And I think you're right on both fronts. One, that it is an act of self-love when we start to give ourselves more to others and we start to share our lives with others and our intimacy, and we you know, we're vulnerable, more open, more transparent. You know, that comes with risk, right? And I think you're right as well in that I think people still are recovering from that contraction that we experienced a couple of years ago. And it's just a really lovely way that you framed it then. So I just want to acknowledge that. And to answer your question, you know, I'm learning a lot very fast. And I feel, you know, it's interesting. What I feel is like a watermelon of thoughts attempting to move through the size of a pinhole. And then it's exactly what I felt. I just, a week or two ago, I came out of a darkness retreat and coming to the light for the first time after days. It felt like that, right? Outside of feeling immense, deep, visceral gratitude, it felt like that. And, you know, to go a little deeper into your question, I think I'm learning patience and compassion for myself and for others, just being a father. I'm learning that, you know, life isn't as, I guess, black and white. It's not as cut and dry. It's in this way or that way. And I live in the gray, and I have for most of my life, to be honest. I mean, I think both. I've lived in the rigidity of it's this way or that way. And I also have lived in the gray. I'm laughing because two friends of mine would say, you were the most open-minded, close-minded person I know. It is a compliment. Take it. I think it's both a compliment and both a fuck you, Steph. And he's not wrong. He's known me since I was 8. Right. So, mate, 17 actually. So, a good friend back in Australia. And he's not wrong. But what I'm learning of late, the last couple of years, is for better or worse, to live more in the gray and to just get a little more curious about the challenges or the difficulties that unravel in my life. But even also the stuff that feels really good, the stuff that feels desirable, it feels like I want more of that. to really question that, not in a way that I'm doubting it and I want to push it away, but more just to be curious in the presence of that, as opposed to this is what it means. Great, let's go. You know, it's that old master paradigm of I've received something, let me go do something with it immediately, as opposed to just pausing for a second. And, you know, I mean, if I were to sum it up, my daughter's teaching me to be more in my feminine, I think, in a very healthy way that helps me access more clear path for my masculine, as opposed to just always having to do something and take action and be in that energy of penetration and be in that energy of activity and purpose-driven. I just try and step back and slow down a little bit. It's very good for my personality because it gives me access to greater range. And so I can use different tools in different situations. And there's some of the things that are coming forward now in this moment that I can tap into in terms of, you know, what have the last, you know, year and a half, 2 years taught me.
I love that. Okay. So a question that I have additionally around this is, like, I think a lot of people struggle to really understand how somebody would define masculine versus feminine, and people genderize it. And we're in a world that's very sensitive and rightfully so, just around gender identity. So how do you look at masculine, feminine, and how can we help everybody listening just kind of get that sense of it?
Yeah, I like the way Michaela Bohm breaks it down. It's where we're talking about two sides of the same coin, two wings of the same bird. They're just energetic expressions in a dualistic reality, right? And, you know, there's masculine, feminine, there's yang and yin, there's doing energy and being energy, there's go energy and flow energy, there's active energy, there's passive energy. And so, and they can be associated with quote unquote masculine and femininity. Now, to me, masculine and feminine and energies are not gender specific. So they're rooted in culture and they're rooted in biology as well. And they're just rooted in the whole human self, right? And so I don't separate the two per se, but they're not purely related to gender. So in other words, if you're in a masculine energetic, that doesn't mean that you're a biological male per se only, right? It can be, but you can also be a biological female that is expressing a masculine energetic. So if you can look at it through a neutral lens, it can be a little less threatening and it can be less rigid. But if those terms still sometimes they get us stuck in our heads, let's go to different terms. Let's go to doing and being energy. So as I expressed to you earlier, I have the propensity as part of my personality, or part of the way that I be in the world and part of the way that I do in the world, right, is I will do a lot. I will experience validation and I'll experience a sense of wholeness through my activity, through my productivity, through my accomplishments, through my goal setting and then achieving those goals. And that can be a very masculine orientated way of living in the world. It serves me to be more as opposed to do more. So to slow down, to settle, to be more in the moment, to be more in the present moment, to be more in the feeling sensation of what life is like, to be less attached to outcome and more, not even focused, but more aware of what is happening in this moment, every moment. And that can be more of a feminine energetic, right? To be more connected to nature, to be more in nature. There's no real agenda outside of what is this experience giving me, right? That serves me just based on who I am. And so if you can look at yourself and if you feel that you're lopsided in a particular expression or way of being, it may serve you to start practicing doing and being differently to what you're accustomed to taste the world and see the world differently. And even that word, that tasting the world differently, right? That's a feminine orientated way of seeing the world. So yeah, it's just something to be aware of when we're moving through the world and to not get too caught up in masculine means this and feminine means that. They're really characteristics of the human self. It's human self first, full stop. Right. That's really it's sentience and consciousness first before any of the identities that we layer upon each other. And these are just ways to understand the world and the way that we move through the world, the way that we be through the world and the way that we do in the world. That's it.
Okay. So I feel like when people think about masculine, feminine, like, is there a way for us to put it in the context of their workday? Like, what does it look like in your career or in your love life, even better, when you're leading with one or the other? And why should anybody care which one they lead with at all? Like, why does it even matter to be mindful of this?
Yeah, and sometimes you don't really need to be mindful of it. But if you're wanting to have we'll call it a conscious or evolved or a growth oriented relationship where you're growing out of patterns that serve you, it can be helpful to understand what energetic you are in and what energetic your partner's in and what you favor. Like, what energetic do you favor? You know, when couples get together, let's look at sexual intimacy for a moment, right? And usually when couples get together, there's one that prefers to lead and be dominant, and there's one that prefers to be led and be more passive, right? That doesn't, and that doesn't mean, we're not talking about a power struggle here that's vested in inequity, that's vested in control and oppression. We're talking about consent, okay? We're talking about two mature people coming together that are playing in their energetics, that are playing in their polarity, and how that polarity fuses and how that brings them closer together and brings intimacy. So the more you know yourself and the more you have confidence and self-awareness, and you've done a level of inner work where you can ask for what you want, where you can make requests, where you can have deeper conversations with your partner, even if those requests can't be met, but you can talk through, work through, communicate through those requests, you're going to have, firstly, a more connected relationship, a healthier relationship, a safer relationship, and a more sexually charged in a healthy way relationship. Now, you may get to a point where you realize, oh, you know, we're not working. We're not an energetic match. We're not a sexual match. We're not an emotional match. But you can't get there without exploration, sincere exploration, and truth sharing. Asking for what you need, making requests, making observations, having open conversations, sharing how you feel. And so in that sense, there will be someone. And look, here's for me one of the greatest signs of any leader, irrespective of masculine, feminine, right? And well, actually, it's not irrespective. It's actually deeply connected. Your ability to lead when you need to lead, and there's an abstract arbitrary nature around that. We'll get to that later. And the ability to be led when you need to be led, and to know the difference, and to also know when to do which. And so essentially, we're oscillating between masculinity and femininity. And you look at some of the most masculine people, masculine men in the world, like elite special forces operators, right? Special operations guys, they have a great capacity to lead, but they also know when they need to be led in certain situations. And they're able to move between the two, right? Now, general broad brushstrokes here. Most operators, unfortunately, aren't connected to their emotional maturity in really healthy ways. And most men most, not all, are attracted to that line of work because they are so emotionally numb and they're coming from violence and hurt and et cetera. It's a way to do that in a, I guess, a socially acceptable way. However, when we're speaking to leadership, being led and leading, they do it really well, exceptionally well. There are a group of people that do it really well. And so if we can apply that and bring that into our intimate relationships, really special things can happen between us.
I love that. And I also feel like you touched on something that is so challenging for people, like just like sexual intimacy. I feel like a lot of people who are like out there dating, I feel like they're making a decision around like a life partner, and like intimacy is such a part of that. Not just like, you know, verbal intimacy, but sexual, physical intimacy. And I feel like people don't completely know themselves, and sometimes it's hard for them to even know what they want or what they're interested in or who they are as far as like how vulnerable they be with somebody, when to share, when not to share. I feel like what's important for that is like one of the biggest growths I've had is I used to have a belief that intimacy meant that I shared what's on my mind. And I've learned that that's so not the case, that sometimes I remove intimacy. I push people away by sharing what's on my mind when it's really just what's going on in the privacy of my mind. And it's not a barrier for me to keep it to myself. It's just between me, myself, and I. And so I think a lot of people struggle with how to figure out how much to share of themselves, who they are, what their preferences are. So I'm just kind of pulling for, do you have any thoughts for someone in the early stages, let's say, of dating? Or maybe they're newlyweds and they're still in that forever journey of getting to know someone. What are some initial thoughts you have on what it really means to create intimacy with somebody?
Yeah, create spaces for intimacy to thrive. It's actually as simple as that. So literally in your, and you may have to put some masculine structure around this since we're on the theme of masculinity and femininity. Structure your week or your month with your partner, spaces, 2 hours, 1 hour, 3 hour, 4 hours, where you can be with each other, where you can ask each other questions, where you can openly share with how your day was. Start with the logistics. Start with the simple stuff. This is what happened today. Okay, what? How did that make you feel? What were some of the feelings that occurred along the way? And over time, you develop this conditioning, or rather this exposure to being more and more honest with each other. And that's a way of sharing intimacy to get to know each other. practice, have an agreement in place. Agreements are so important in relationship that when we're sharing, we're refraining from judgment. Practice nonviolent communication. Practice the imago dialogue where you're reflecting back, so actively listening. You're listening to confirm what the person is saying, not to respond with your own agenda or your defensiveness or your perspective or point of view, but rather to really hear that person. Get into these practices regularly. Very simple to understand, not super easy to do. But the elite are elite in anything we do in life because the elite have mastered the basics. So if we can't get the basics right, we're not going to go into deeper levels of intimacy and connection. So if you want to practice getting to know the other person, create spaces for you to do that.
It's so interesting because that sounds straightforward, but it's like how many people listening right now are actually scheduling time with their partner to get to know them? It's such low-hanging fruit with high value. You know, I find that we kind of live in a community, and maybe this is just you and I, Steph, where we are in a community where sometimes people are focused so much on processing and getting to know each other that they're not in like the fun that life is. So for example, I've been dating somebody new who I really love. So I was dating like people do, like one other person in the very early stages, and I was getting to know another guy. Great guy. But on our third or fourth date, we went to a dinner, and I remember I said, I'm a really sarcastic person. And he was like, really? I'm not getting that from you at all. And it was in that moment that I realized, oh, wow, this guy brings out so much depth in me, but there's no lightness. And that's just as much of me as the depth. Like, I'm the goof troop over here. You know what I mean? Like, I just volunteered on Skid Row this morning and I was giving out cake to the homeless. People were doing tacos and I was giving out the dessert. And I was like spilling my cake and like playing with everyone. It's like, I'm not a serious person, but this guy only got to know and tune into the serious part of me. It was then that I realized like, oh, wow, there's something about this energy exchange that brings out only one and not all of me, of the versions of me that exist. And I do think that sometimes when there's some people listening who maybe they don't need more time to get to know each other and process. Maybe they need more time to have fun. I'm curious, like, do you have any messages around what it really takes to create a positive relationship? Because I know part of it is like the depth and like really getting to know another person, which sometimes is hard because sometimes we don't know ourselves. And it's like, how are we even going to share that with someone else? But even further, it's like how to really prosper, right? Like, okay, yeah, you need to schedule that time to get to know each other. What are some other things that come to mind for you?
Fun and play and joy in any relationship is fundamental to its growth, to its success, to its moving through and moving forward, right? And moving on. As is depth, as is our ability to grow together as a couple and grow as individuals. And you need both. Now, the other side of that coin is that, and I'm not trying to put you off here in terms of the decision that you made in any capacity, but sometimes people can't be everything to us. And so maybe you extract you are able to be your joyous, sarcastic, fun self in other dynamics in relationships. Now, the other side to that, and I'm not doing this to confuse you on purpose, but bear with me here. The other side to that is that if that's a really integral part of who you are and that man and that dynamic is not bringing that out of you, or maybe there's a part of you that unconsciously doesn't feel safe enough to be that person, or you're just not stimulated to be that part of you, and that's a really important part of who you are, then you've made a very aligned, authentic decision based on what your needs are. And so again, it comes back to knowing ourselves. But if I was to say fun, play, joy, it is just as important, if not in certain circumstances, more important than traversing depth with your partner and doing the deep inner work. We need space away from the deep inner work. We need space for integration. We need space for fun and play. We're fucking human having a human experience. It can't be all quote unquote spiritual. And so if you can play and dance with both of those particular energies, it was just looking at this through a dualistic lens, you're going to be more than likely winning in intimacy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I found it interesting. You wrote about this concept of like life as a lone wolf. Like there's a lot of, you know, people who identify as men who are feeling lonely. And I know that loneliness is just kind of like across the board. And one of my biggest fears in relationship is being with somebody that I feel even more lonely with. Like, I don't tend to feel very lonely, but I think sometimes somebody's presence can make you feel more lonely than you even would alone. When it comes to social isolation and, I don't know, like, there's a lot of research around the marriage effect and I don't know, like, do you have any thoughts on what is going on with happiness and partnership? Like, why is it that sometimes the data is showing us that people are happier without their partner, or they feel more alone with their partner? Is there something that we can do to take care of ourselves and to fill our cup, just based on your work, that you're seeing would be useful for people to bring to their relationship?
Most people aren't ready to be in intimate relationship because what real intimate relationship asks of you is depth and play and accessing parts of you that maybe you haven't even accessed yourself. And you're not meant to. It's not like you have to access them before you jump into this relationship. But it's going to ask you to be very vulnerable and raw and real, and that can be very scary. Now, we like the idea and the fantasy of being into the same relationship and being open with someone and being held by them and going through the fire with them and all that. But when we're actually doing it, it's a little too much. And the other part to that is that not only are we not ready to actually be in intimate relationship, we haven't spent enough time by ourselves to get to know who we are and actually enjoy our company and love the parts of us that we've hated for so long and disliked for so long. Because when a partner comes and shines that light on those parts that we don't like about ourselves, we get very offended and it's very difficult for us. The other part is that so many of us aren't choosing the right containers, the quote-unquote aligned containers or types of relationship containers to be in. For example, very simple, very rudimentary. They're in a monogamous relationship when what they really need is a monogamous relationship. Or they're in this open relationship when they don't actually want to be in an open and non-monogamous relationship. They want to be in a monogamous relationship. I'm using very general terms, and there are so many shades, and all of this resides on a spectrum, right? But we're in not the most accurate relationship containers for us. Or we don't know how to ask for what we really need. We don't know how to make requests. We withhold, we hide in the relationship. That is felt at a neurological level in the other person. It is felt in the container of the relationship. That prompts them to also retract. So now you've got people contracting and retracting in relationship, and they're not really in the relationship. But on the surface they are, but they're not really in it. Their bodies aren't in it. Their nervous systems aren't in it. They're not really connected because they're scared. So there are myriad reasons why that's happening and how that's happening. But I think those big three that I just mentioned are probably a good place to start.
I love what you're sharing because, like, it's true. It's interesting. I have a very dear friend who I just think the world of. Like, she's just such an amazing human being. She's done so much work on herself, like, so vibrant. And she fell in love after being married for a lot of years. It was like her first love to someone that wasn't her husband. And it was obviously really profound for her. But then also there was this element of kind of like the explosion that happens 3 months in, you know, like they were going so well. It was such a beautiful love story. And then next thing they knew, they had some sort of fight about something that was really small, like the way that she, you know, the color of her sweater, like that level of something. And then it evolved into something else, right? Because it's never about the color of your sweater, right? It evolved into her not feeling heard. It evolved into her crying. It evolved into him not hearing her, not being heard. And then it ended with them breaking up. And I think she's absolutely ready for a partner. And I think she was super diligent in seeing how he showed up in their first real fight. I know a lot of people struggle with conflict. A lot of people struggle with being judgmental. A lot of people struggle with self-sabotage, right? Like they sabotage their relationships. How does somebody know whether they're in a relationship or not, if they're really ready to be there? Like, what are some of those indicators?
So firstly, it appears as if it's self-sabotage. It's really hyper-protection because we're scared. And it's a part of us. It's the protector, one of many protector parts of us coming forward, putting up barriers that appear to self-sabotage, ultimately to avoid intimacy or closeness or to avoid being seen in a particular way, even though consciously that's what we want. That's the very thing that we want, to be seen, to be heard, to be understood. And so how do we know if we're in the right relationship? With great difficulty and with great ease. It's really one of those paradoxes, right, of life. And I know sometimes we ask big questions around life, existential questions, and this is one of them. Like, how do you know you're in the right relationship for you? And, you know, the right relationship for you now at the age of 50 may be very different, not that you're 50, I'm not talking about you. The age of 50 may be very different to the right relationship that you needed when you were 25.
Right.
Right. So it evolves with time and every stage of life that you're in, every intra and interpersonal development that you move. One of the things that we can do is to consistently check in with ourselves and ask ourselves very honestly, are we choosing this relationship? Am I choosing myself? Is this relationship making me a better human? is she making me or he making me a better human? Am I making them a better human? Am I helping them be a better human? Is our relationship impacting those around us in really healthy ways as well, and positive ways? And asking those questions on a regular basis can continue to determine whether this relationship is right for me. Now, what if the relationship isn't right for you? Does that mean that it should end? Maybe, but maybe not. Maybe there needs to be a reconfiguration of the relationship. Mm-hmm. Maybe you have to sit down with each other and move through, I don't know, Saturn return, or move through in spiritual terms, or move through the fire with each other and transmute and move out of a habit and a pattern that is no longer serving the dynamic of that relationship. And you've outgrown elements of that relationship and need to have a sit down with each other. Sit down is metaphorically speaking, of course, but maybe pragmatically as well, and work through some stuff. Mm-hmm. And maybe once you've really put the effort in, you look back and you go, you know what? This still isn't right for me. So then you make a decision and you quote unquote consciously uncouple. All that means is that you do your best to be mature. You come back to remembering the love that you share for each other, even though the breakup is difficult, and changing the habit of living together and being with each other and the routines that you're in, and not really wanting to break up, but knowing it's the thing that you need to do. Everyone has a different path when it comes to relationships. There really isn't this general rule book that applies to everyone. It's like parenting. It's like there are, I'd say, millions or at least hundreds of thousands of different parenting books out there. Throw them all in the fucking bin. They're good for nothing. Not because they don't give sound advice and the guidance isn't there. It's because nothing can prepare you for the visceral shock of that experience, good, bad, or ugly.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter what anyone says.
Mm-hmm.
My friend said to me, who's a very successful individual, has 6 kids, said to me, when your little girl comes out, when you see her, something will shift in you, no matter how. And he's a prolific speaker. He's a prolific communicator. When he shared that with me, I was touched. I was like, I don't get what you say. Which came out. Different story.
I love that. And one thing that I think would probably come up for anybody who's tuning into this is the question of, okay, I can work through things with somebody, but how do I know if this is not like a deep character flaw? Like, how do I be responsible with my time and their time? How do I look at this and say, this is not workable? For example, the friend that I was giving the example of, she was like, yeah, you know, he didn't want to hear me. He was talking over me. I couldn't get my words out. He escalated like the anger inside of him. Like, she started to see all these character flaws, and it becomes difficult because, you know, I think about being raised in my parents' house. I've said this on the podcast before. I was under their norms for 21 years. I'm only 36. I've spent less time out of their rules than I've spent in their rules. So it makes sense that it would take time to do the undoing of the things that I don't want to carry with me. And so when I see someone who has a really big character flaw, I just think to myself, like, how do we look at that and not say, that's a tip of a very big iceberg that I don't want to sit around and wait for them to work on? Like, how do we be responsible with these work-throughs?
Well, the nature of the question assumes that it is a character flaw, number one. And what if it's not a character flaw? What if it's an opportunity? And so for me, the nature of the question, to me, I get very curious about the energy and the intention, unconscious, behind that question. And really start to unpack is how and why are you seeing that quite rigidly or very firmly or very clearly as a character flaw? Because what if it's an opportunity for you to step into your power, to ask for what you need, to say, hey, I get that's a part of who you are. And in our dynamic, that doesn't serve me. My request is that you don't communicate to me that way and that we communicate this way. Is that something that you can do? Stepping into that level of power and confidence. And can your partner meet you there? And they giving your partner an opportunity to say, you know what? Hurt? I can do that for you. I can do that for you because actually the request that you're making of me to be less aggressive is actually really good for me because I don't like the feeling that I live with because I live with the aggression 24/7. You can leave me. I'm still going to be with the aggression. I don't like that. So thank you for calling me forward. So is it a deep character flaw or is it an opportunity of people coming together? My take on relationships is we all bond in various ways. And one of the ways that we bond is through trauma. Every single person will bond through a trauma bond.
Mm-hmm.
The severity and intensity of that trauma bond varies from couple to couple.
Mm-hmm.
Different conversation. We can go down that rabbit hole if you like. But those trauma bonds, irrespective of whether they're very subtle and light or very deep and intense, they exist for a very specific reason. And they exist to bring us out of patterns that no longer serve us. That's my belief.
Mm-hmm.
That's what my research says. That's what my anecdotal experience says in 23 years of working with individuals and couples. And it's what I see in my own life. And it's what many other great authors, practitioners, thought leaders say. Doesn't mean it's true. It's just what the way I see it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something profound that happens when we're able to step into that power and make very clear requests.
Mm-hmm. Mm. As I'm listening to you talk about this, like, I think obviously it's a process, but it sounds like what I'm hearing when you communicate is like, there's a level of growth that you need to have to be able to communicate that. There's a level of growth that the other person needs to have in order to receive that. And I imagine it's really hard for somebody to walk that line of discernment, of figuring out, like, am I being judgmental? And I'm not giving somebody grace? You know, because I think, like, growth looks really messy, right? Like, some there might be a person here that is listening, saying, like, yeah, I'm going to say this to my partner or the person I'm dating. And the person's going to receive it well, right? They'll say, oh, wow, thanks for telling me that. I have enough awareness to hold that. But then they do the thing again, right? Because it's a pattern. It's part of them. What am I trying to ask you? I feel like
I think I know what your question is. I've got,
yeah, give it to me.
You're correct. If there's another, you're course correct.
Yeah.
So growth can be messy, and it isn't always messy. But when we fear growth to be messy, and we sense that growth could be messy, we sometimes avoid the growth because it can be big and intense, and we run away. And so projecting, hey, that person has a deep character flaw. I can't budget. I'll never have an opportunity to budget. I'm not even going to try. I'm not going to put any effort in. Let me just get away from that. Is more of an indication of what's happening internally within us.
Mm.
Now, after a period of time, and there's no set time, after 321 and a half days, if this person isn't doing A, then you need to leave. However, if you're aware of something that doesn't serve you in the relationship and you continuously make requests, and that person either cannot do it, will not do it, or is unable to do it, then you've got to make a mature decision as a mature adult. Hey, this no longer serves me. It's a non-negotiable. I have to make some changes. When is that time? I don't know. And no one knows. You won't know until you're in that moment. But my philosophy and my approach is you have to put the effort in to have a clear conscience and say, you know what? I've really tried. I've really made an effort. I don't want to make an effort anymore. And I'm authentic to that. And now my time is done in this relationship. But if you're running away and you're in avoidance, you're not doing your work.
Mm.
And you're not giving them an opportunity to grow. Don't be in a relationship. Just be by yourself. You'll grow by yourself. You grow up to a certain point, but you'll grow.
I love that. And I feel like time, there's no shortcut to time. Sometimes that's truly what you need to give. And it's almost like we need to set a deadline. Because it's interesting. I think about this girlfriend I love. I never would have saw her texting me saying like, hey, this thing just imploded and it's over. She's just such a high consciousness and vibration. And the way the relationship was going, I would have never, ever thought she'd send me this message this morning. And I was like, oh, I'm on skid row with cake on my hands. Like, I'm going to text you in an hour. And just, I heard the story. It really sat with me. I think a lot of people experience that, especially in dating, but also in marriage and partnership, is like the 7-year itch in marriage, right? Where it's like, maybe we're just not designed to be monogamous. I know marriage for love is like a new thing the past 100 or so years. But do you have any perspective on what is going on with that explosion, like in the early phases of dating? Why is it that there are so many couples at the 3-month mark that have a little explosion? Why is it that so many relationships, you know, marriages at the 7-year mark have the 7-year itch? Like, what do you think that itch or that explosion is really about?
Yeah, so it's an interesting question. So if we look at the limerence phase and the honeymoon period, it's a hormonal flush that begins to shift, right? Mm-hmm. And so at some point, whether it's 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, 18 months, 2 weeks, that hormonal flush that is bonding us and bringing us together, it starts to wear off. And once that wears off, the rose-colored glasses come. And once they come off, we start being more of ourselves as opposed to this, let me put my best foot forward kind of scenario, and both partners do this. And then what happens is it's a bit of a shock to the nervous system. It's a bit of a shock to the way that we see each other because it's like, you weren't doing that before when we first met. Are you who you say you are? And we start to panic and we start to worry. Plus, the things that those people are doing, the habits, the way they're treating themselves, treating us, they remind us of something that is uncomfortable. And more than likely something that we need to heal within ourselves. And so because we're averse to that, not because we're consciously averse to it, but because it's difficult, it's change, we almost want to push it back and we start causing friction and we start creating arguments. We start creating space and distance to feel safe. So we're actually avoiding more intimacy as opposed to getting curious and accepting these natural evolutions and stages of relating. And sometimes the honeymoon period, if you like, the limerence space can last for years,
right,
depending on your dynamics, depending on your soul contracts, depending on your karma, if you like, depending on so many different variables, pragmatic, esoteric, spiritual, existential, etc. And so coming into an acceptance of that and a softening into that can actually help you transcend the, not necessarily the challenges, you still move through challenges, but it can help you evolve into the next beautiful stage of relating that is different to the first stage of relating, when you're getting to know each other and everything's explosive and novel and there's so much variety there because it's novel. You start to experience novelty and variety in different ways in the relationship, which just isn't as valued. It's not as valued in our highly charged, highly individualistic, high consumption society, right?
Yeah.
That's basically it.
Well, so, okay, I looked up the definition of limerence when you were just talking about it right now, and it was interesting just to give it a read. It said, a state of being, and this is from Oxford Dictionary, a state of being infatuated or obsessed with another person, typically experienced involuntarily and characterized by a strong desire for reciprocation of one's feelings, but not primarily for a sexual relationship. This is
a childhood need for validation coming through.
Well, so here's the thing. How many years have I spent in therapy crying over God knows what? How many years have I been working on myself? I think I'm being myself, right? Like I got this new love and it doesn't help that he lives two blocks away. Like talk about limerence. We're like limerence on crack. He's two blocks away. So it's like we can't even create space if we want it, which I'm happy about, but also very aware of. And so I'm hanging out with this guy thinking I'm really being myself and I want to celebrate that because it's freaking hard to be yourself in this world. It really is. And I think I'm being myself, but I imagine that there's things happening in my subconscious that are not being myself. And I just don't know what those are. Is there any question or thought or insight you have to help us catch ourselves when we're not being ourselves, where we're not being ourselves, or to help us pay attention to where someone else might not be themselves? And I think this applies not just to relationship, but to everyday life.
So how do you notice if you're not being yourself in relationship? One of the best things that we can do is notice what's happening in our bodies. Are our bodies contracting? Do we feel like we can't share the thing that we want to share? Do we want to laugh, but we can't laugh, or the belly laugh that we'd like to laugh? Do we want to ask a question of that prospective partner or that person that we're dating that is our partner, but we're too scared to ask? Like, notice the contractions and the pull back in the relationship. It's often an indication that you're not being yourself. And it doesn't necessarily always mean that it's that person that is not bringing the best out of you. It could mean that there's something going on with you where you don't feel safe, where your partner or that person reminds you of something that doesn't allow you to be fully expressed. So always bring it back to you. Let you be the first port of call when you're making self-assessments, and then start to look outwards into your environment, into the immediate environment and beyond, and look at the stimulus that's happening there. But often it's something that's within us. So notice in the body where we feel a contraction in our tummy, where maybe our heart flutters, we get sweaty hands. Like, notice what's happening in the body. Visceral mindfulness training is going to lead you to a deeper understanding of yourself and where you're not being more of you and how you're not being more of you in relationship.
Okay, so this is a controversial suggestion, and I'm curious what you think here.
Right.
I think it's friends. Your friends are neutral, right? Like most, in theory, they just want you to be happy. They have no skin in the game of if your relationship works out outside of your happiness. I'm curious, like, what are your thoughts there? Because I think a lot of people date people that their friends may or may not like. I'm dating someone that all my friends really like him. And it's really fun to experience that because I've dated people where people see why I like the person. They think he's a good guy, but they don't really like him for me. And when I look back, usually I think, well, there's a lot of wisdom in that. They're just neutrally observing who that person's being and who I'm being, and they're seeing some disconnects. So yeah, any feedback around being observed by people or if there's value in that?
There is value in being observed by people. It is not controversial to want our friends and our immediate loved, beloved peer group to validate and approve of the intimate partners we bring into our lives. Remember, our peer groups are reflections of our validity and our identity in the world, and they reinforce our sense of self. That's what peer groups do. We're relational beings. And so having the approval of those that we care about is really important to us. So there's nothing to me controversial about that. I think it's actually healthy to a degree. Now, if we allow those peer groups to dictate that we date and don't date, that becomes problematic. And I think you're very accurate when you say most of us, when we're dating someone, are also thinking, would my friends approve? Because remember, our friends are those, that in-group, that if we're out of that in-group and we're in an out-group, we feel exiled, we feel isolated, we feel alone, we feel threatened. You know, thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago, being by yourself and or being in the safety of a group meant danger and likely death in a volatile environment that still lives in our nervous systems. So these experiences that we had as we were forming as humans, especially as we were bonding as humans and our prefrontal cortex was forming and our limbic system was developing more and language was developing and we were bonding in deeper ways, they still exist within us and they still show us more about who we are than not and more about what we need as well. And so finding that balance of being autonomous and sovereign and choosing from your own identity, but also valuing the input of your in-group is healthy.
Yeah. People, I feel like it's a struggle for people because it's like we want to vent to our friends. We want to get their support, but we also want to talk smack about people that we're with. We don't want to influence how people think about the people we're with in a negative or a less thoughtful way. But we also need support. We also need help. We also need accountability. We also need insight. I've had some friends come to me about their partners and I really like their partners. And they'll tell me something that I'm like, that's unacceptable. But what I learned is I'm a different puzzle. I'm a different relational puzzle. The things that are going to work for me are not going to always work for them. And I can't project my puzzle and my solutions always upon them. But there are some things that they go through that for me would be an absolute deal breaker with a partner, but for them, it's not. So if a friend is asking for your feedback, is there any way you've walked the line with that? Because I think there's probably a lot of people listening who have people that they care about, whether it's, you know, and they want to be a positive resource and not a judgmental one. And sometimes that could be really hard.
Yeah. I treat friends the way I treat any intimate relationship as well. In Greek philosophy, friendship is one of the most revered forms of love beyond Eros, actually. And there's something to be said for that. And so my point in saying all that is sometimes we will place, and the proof's in the pudding, if you like, we'll place greater weight in the love and the quality of a friendship over sometimes our life partners. And you said it earlier yourself, I'm looking for that approval. I'm saying it in a different way, but I'm looking for that approval from my friends, from my partner, and lucky they really like it.
Yeah.
I'm happy about it. There's something to be said for that. And so when I said at the beginning, I treat friendships like I treat relationships, I want to forge agreements with my friends. I want to have open communication with them. I want to have trusting, open communication with them. I want to set agreements around how we judge each other, how we communicate with each other, how we don't judge each other, how we repair in conflict, what we share with each other, how we share it, confidentiality, like all of that. Like I want to set those agreements and have those deep, intimate conversations. I want to forge intimacy with my friends. I don't want to be able to only show them one dimension of who I am and only show them the good per se, or only show them the convenient, because then they're not going to be able to be real friends to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of people are withholding in their relationships because there's something maybe that's a red flag that they don't want to share about the person they married or the person they're dating. And it creates distance in their relationships because, you know, I have a lot of friends whose best friend got engaged to someone and they're married now and they don't hear anything about that element of their life because that person is protecting it. Or maybe there's something going on that they are not necessarily proud of. I was thinking about what's happening in the Middle East and just working on Skid Row this morning as a volunteer. And I was thinking about like, it just takes so much to be a person participating in society. Like the amount of shit we need to do to exist here. Can you imagine if we didn't die and there was no death date and we just had to keep going, putting food on the table, reinventing ourselves, having our careers going like endless? There's something about a deadline that I think almost holds us more accountable to being who we want to be. I think when you're talking about friends and the importance of that, you know, but also just I'm thinking, It's an attachment thing, right? Like in romantic relationships, yes, we have our attachment styles. And friends are a place for me, at least, where I've gotten reference of a secure attachment. Like, I have really good girlfriends. So if I'm dating and I get hurt, my reference of healthy attachment, healthy communication defaults on to the women in my life. Obviously, they're not romantic partners. I'm going to have a shit ton more needs for my romantic partner than I would my, not to sound needy, but than I would for my girlfriends, you know? For someone who's listening right now and thinking to themselves, I don't really know myself. I want to get to know myself better. I want to be more ready for real love, whether they're with someone or whether they're not. What are a few things or maybe like exercises or steps or even books that you think they should read? Maybe just to like start to get more connected to who they truly are and who they want to be in the world. Like, where would you send them?
Yeah, in terms of books, I would definitely start with Expectation Hangover, Christine book, my last book. That's a great book to start with. Also, Attached is a really good book too, just to help understand yourself in a deeper way. Five Personality Patterns is a great book as well. And ultimately, spend time with people. Get to know yourself through the mirror of another person. So watch close friendships. Share more than you normally would. Like, challenge yourself to push the edges of intimacy in the relationships. Use them as a training ground, but also use them as intrinsic value in and of themselves as well. But use them as a training ground and a fertile training ground for even, you know, quote unquote, deeper intimate romantic partnerships or just romantic partnerships. Like, practice being honest with your friends, practice sharing, practice being vulnerable, practice opening up your heart and sharing things that are really difficult and challenging and how you've held in that and get a very real experience of that. And I understand that's risky, but get that's not easy. Mm-hmm. That's the exploration. Ultimately,
this conversation has been so fun to just kind of like jump around date, like commitment, relationships, vulnerability with you. Is there something I haven't asked you that you think would be useful for everybody to know through the lens of commitment and choosing the right partner?
Yeah, just don't leave a relationship too early. We touched on this. I just didn't use those words before. Don't leave a relationship too early. Most people leave a relationship too early. What do I mean by too early? Where you leave and you haven't really grown. And you're just going to bring the same patterns and habits and baggage into the next relationship. So grow in the relationship before you make a definitive decision to say, you know what, I'm done here. Like, really, really grow and give your partner an opportunity to grow. You can't force them to grow and it's up to them and it's their path, but provide the opportunity, set that intention for the container and yourself.
I think that's really good and actually quite counterintuitive advice. There's so much out there about leaving. And I feel like I'm the type of personality that wants to exit when something's not working. I think that's one of my wounds and I've worked on that. It's served me. So that's kind of slippery because sometimes I'm like, oh, look at all the times I had this little wound. It worked for me. It validated it. But I do think there's real art in staying, leaning in, growing, not overstaying, but being intentional. So this has been great. Where can people work with you, learn from you? Like, where do you suggest they go from here?
Yeah, thank you. So a couple of different places. If you want to work with me in a one-on-one capacity, coachwithsteph.com. My normal website is stephanosafandos.com. And if you want to join me for Breathwork for the Feminine every month, ladies, you definitely can. It's live in person in Austin and live streamed and recorded. And that's stephanosafandos.com/feminine. And lastly, if you just want to join a community of just like-hearted, like-minded individuals and visionaries, creators, entrepreneurs, you know, people just doing, you know, you have a message in the world, you just want to be around cool people, come and join my community. It's Asraya, Asraya.io. All the information there.
Love it so much. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much for tuning into the U-Turn podcast. And thank you again so much for our sponsors. We are here because of you. And to our listeners, thank you for checking out our sponsors. We always pick people and brands that we trust and we believe in. And just for listening to the show, writing your reviews on the Apple app, and just being willing to make your own U-turns. We'll see you next week.